guest, and this afternoon it is Robin Mayhew. We'll hear his life story, which includes being part of a band in the 60s, a band who, by their own admission, say, describe themselves as the 60s rock band that almost made it big, The President. We'll also hear how he worked with many major artists throughout the 70s. His life story coming up after this.
BBC Sussex with Alison Ferns.
Weird coincidences. That song, ABBA, Knowing Me, Knowing You, was going to be the song choice of our My Life guest today, but in the end he went for something else. But that was the song that was already scheduled to play at that point in the show.
That is odd.
It's odd, isn't it? It is odd, Robin.
It is.
It's a strange old world, as we're finding out this afternoon.
There are places I remember.
Well, as you just heard, I'm joined in the studio by Robin Mayhew. He is our My Life guest this afternoon, and we should say you were one of our 100 lifers.
I was indeed, and thanks very much for having me in, because obviously that expired at the end of the year, but I'm going on.
Exactly, yes. You didn't expire, thank goodness.
Yes.
Where do you live, Robin?
I live in Barnham, just south of Arundel.
Okay, where are you from originally?
I was from Cheam, Yule in Surrey.
Okay.
And then after that team, but many things happened between me getting from there to Barnum.
I know, and that's what we're going to find out about. Now, of course, your big claim to fame is that you were a member of the Presidents, and I've had a look at the website, and I love the fact that you describe yourselves as the 60s rock band that almost
made it big. It is. We did almost make it big. I mean, it was very unfortunate. We were a great band. We were formed back in 1958, and we played a variety of things, a lot of covers, but they're rather obscure covers. And as it went on, we never wrote our own material, but we had a wonderful arrangement of a song called Candyman, which had been done by, what's his name? Oh, I can't remember his name. We did this arrangement of it, and Glyn Johns, an old school friend of ours, who's now a great producer, in fact, this year he's going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, heard it, loved it, it's Roy Orbison, by the way, heard it and loved it, and took us into IBC Studios to record it, which we did. He gave the record to Decca, who signed us, which was fabulous, and then Decca, who had turned the Beatles down at some time previously, had another band called Brian Paul and the Tremolos, and they gave it to them.
How dare they?
And we had to relegate ours to the B-side. So they made number 8 in the charts. And I do believe, with the arrangement we had of it, which was very Stonesy, because we were great muckers with the Stones, it had all those things of that time, all the harmonica, the guitar and everything was just right. And I think it would have done it, and we would have made it big.
Mm. Is it a big regret?
Well, yes, it really caused the demise of the band, because after that, Ricky Tyrrell, the singer, he sort of stepped away from it, and Tony Finch, our guitarist, rhythm guitarist, he left. And we plodded on as a covers band, doing clubs and pubs around South London. But in the end, we were so demoralised, we said, that's it. So we knocked it on the head.
Wasn't meant to be. What a shame.
A shame, yeah.
Mm. But you did meet your wife.
I did.
Through the band. So
it,
every
I
cloud.
Did. It does, yes. No, we met, yes. A wonderful meeting, and it continued, and it's still going on now. It's wonderful.
She was a fan, wasn't she?
She was a fan. She was a big fan of the band, and I eventually managed to sort of persuade her to come out with me, which she did, and that went on. And then, after the band broke up, my father decided, well, not because the band broke up, but he had already decided to move to Cape Town. So he had bought a business out there, a trucking business, and I thought, well, what do I do? So I thought, well, okay, I'll go along. Cape Town sounds like an idea. So Marty and I, we got engaged, and I left her and took the boat, the Transvaal Castle, and we went down to Cape Town with my folks, and we got the business going. My father sadly died just after that, but my sister and brother-in-law, who were living in Pretoria, came down and joined us, and we ran the business for about a year. Then I came back and married Marty, which was wonderful.
Mm.
And then Of course, I had to wrench her away from her wonderfully tight family and take her back with me. It was great for us to go there, but I tell you, when we arrived in Cape Town, this lovely 19-year-old 60s girl in a miniskirt walking down Adderley Street was incredible. It did get a bit of attention,
I bet.
Anyway, we had a wonderful life. She got a wonderful job and we both worked hard and used to go to the beach almost, like two or three times a week in the Indian Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean.
So a great lifestyle.
Yeah, fabulous. But, of course, apartheid and the two English people.
Mm. What was it like to live with that?
Very difficult.
To see that.
We had a girl who used to come and clean for us.
Mm.
If I took her... The fridge had to be locked. Not that I believe she would have ever taken anything, but everybody said, you must lock your fridge. If I took her home after work, she had to ride in the back of the car. If you caught a bus, you had to sit in a certain seat. If you wanted to take the lift, you had to take the lift that was for white people. You see, you had whites, coloureds and blacks.
Mm.
And the colours wouldn't mix with the Bantus.
It's hard to get your head around, isn't it?
Yeah, the train, you had different carriages for white people and coloured people.
Mm. So did it get too much for you in the end? Is that why you came home?
Definitely, yeah.
Mm.
It was. And obviously we had strong family ties with Mardi's family, which was a very large, extended family. And all my old mates from the music times, they were there. I missed it, you know. Mm. And music, it was always there in my mind. I wanted to get back to it.
So when you came back, you got involved in the pharmaceutical industry.
I did.
Doing what?
I went on a course. I'd always loved biology at school and that sort of thing. I toyed with the idea of a doctor and all the rest of it. But went to work for Abbott Laboratories. They were based down in Queenborough in Kent. And became a medical rep, detailing products to GPs and a little bit of hospital equipment, infusion sets and things, and got on very well. But then it dawned on me that I could be driving a Cortina around and detailing stuff to doctors for the rest of my life. I could have been an area manager and a regional manager. And I thought, hang on a minute, no. More to life than this somehow.
And then, of course, your first son, Ben, arrived in the world.
Mm.
And then, I understand after that, the call of the open road hit you again and you decided to go to Spain. How old was Ben when that happened? Really? So with a one-year-old in tow, you decided
madness.
Is it madness? Adventurous?
Well, we were very lucky. When we'd come back from South Africa, Mard's father very generously helped us get a house, and we had a bit of money, but he helped us get a house. So we had that, and then we saw this advert in the paper, bar lease for sale in Ibiza. And we'd been to Ibiza as a big family with Mard's family, and great, the thought of the sun and the bar and that dream. But warning to anybody, don't do it. Because you don't see much of the sun, you're up at Sparrows in the morning and you're going to bed very late at night and it's tough.
Mm. You had quite an interesting relationship with the Spanish police.
Very. Well, you had to have sort of a permit to have a permit, if you see what I mean. And the police, they didn't really like the Brits there taking their jobs and things. And they used to come in the bar in the afternoon and sit there and we'd have to ply them with lagers and drinks and they'd come in again in the evening. And there was this feeling all the time, this is going to go on forever, And
so how long were you in Spain for?
Only about a year.
Oh, okay.
Just under a year.
Okay, so
we did the season.
Half so long.
Did the season, didn't see much of the sun, and sold the lease and ran away and came home.
When you came home, where did you settle then?
We had to live at Mardi's parents' house in Yule, because our house was let. We'd let it when we went to Ibiza, and I had no job.
Mm.
So one day I went round to the bungalow, which was in Dorking Road in Epsom, that the Rolling Stones used to live in. They'd rented that and lived there. And Ian Stewart, sadly missed now, Ian Stewart, the pianist who put the Stones together, he was living there, and my old school chum Paul Waby was there, and Glyn Johns was living there. So it was all back, and there was one other guy there called Nicky Graham, and he was a keyboard player for a band called Tucky Buzzard. And they, through the connection in the bungalow, had met Bill Wyman, who was going to produce their album. And I thought, well, hang on, this is music. And they wanted a hand. They had no roadie or sound engineer. They bought a wonderful new PA from this mad electronics boffin who lived in Ealing called Mike Turner. who had this concept for this fantastic PA system, and it was small, neat, but it was very, very advanced compared with the norm that was available. And they said, come along with us, and we're going to rehearse this album, we're going to go to Spain.
And there you were, back with your first love of music.
Yeah.
Hold that thought, we're just going to find out what's happening on the road, and
okay,
then we'll be back to hear more with Robin Mayhew. You're listening to Alison Ferns on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, and you join me in conversation this afternoon with Robin Mayhew from Surrey. So, Robin, Sussex. so we've been hearing about the major artists that you worked with through the 70s, David Bowie being one of them. How did that meeting come about?
Well, that was like the coincidences you were having earlier. I mean, I was with this band called Tucky Buzzard, and I couldn't believe it, and I was suddenly on a plane to L.A., with this band who were going to try their album out, and we came back after doing only about 6 or 7 gigs in the States, and they signed themselves with this guy Tony DeVries from Gem Music Management in Regent Street, who had just signed a pre-Ziggy Stardust Bowie, David Bowie, and he said to us, oh, we'll get a gig for you straight away, you can come and support David, we're doing this little demonstration gig for some record execs. So we, Tucky Buzzard, heavy metal, sort of Deep Purple type band, went to this little club in North London. There's only about 20 people there. And we opened with our set, which was awfully loud, and finished. And we couldn't take the gear out. We couldn't take it out of the venue. And Bowie was doing a demonstration of some of the songs that he was preparing for his new album. And he had long blonde hair and big flared trousers and flowery shirt. And the dear Mick Ronson, again, sadly missed, passed away a few years ago, was there with him on a stool. And it was a semi-acoustic set, and it was dreadful.
Really?
Absolutely dreadful. I mean, the composition was good, but the sound was, and I couldn't believe it. And anyway, it finished after squealing with feedback and howl and all sorts of things, and we started to move our gear out, Tucky Buzzard. And I had a tap on the shoulder, and Angie Bowie came up to me and said, David wants to talk to you. So we went back to the table, and I sat down with him, and he said, how on earth was I able to hear everything that your singer sung with all that noise going on? I said, well, it's the PA and it's me, you know. And he said, we're taking a new band out on the road. Will you come to a rehearsal to Beckenham Rugby Club?
Wow, talk about right place, right time.
Yeah, absolutely. That word, absolutely. And we went to the rugby club. Dave Brown, the bass player from Tucky Buzzard, came with me and helped me set up. And I met Peter Hunsley, the roadie who was looking after their gear. And it was all there. I made sure that all the amplifiers were only singly stacked, not double, like was traditional. They had a 4x12 with 4 speakers on top. And I said, no, make them all low. I don't want all the sound coming in the mics. And then the band came in, and I didn't recognise David Bowie. There he was, red hair, mullet, tight jeans, and looking totally different with these peculiar-looking guys, but Mick Ronson. And they set up, plugged in, and we just went. And they did the set, which started with Hang On To Yourself, which always started the set for the years to come. They played right through it, and Bowie was astonished. I hardly had to do anything for the mix. Just a bit on the first number to get it right, and then he just was walking around in front and just amazed, and it was wonderful. He said, this is it, we're going to do it.
And you did do it. But then, I'm surprised by this, you stepped away from the music industry for a second time then in 1982, and yet by the sounds of it,
I know.
You were really getting on. I mean, you were really successful. So
yeah,
why?
I had a wonderful time.
Why?
I mean, I was producing
away?
Producing records, doing stuff, and I had my own PA company called Ground Control. And there we were. That was up in Bethnal Green, and I was out touring with different artists, Lou Reed, Mott the Hoople, all these people.
Yeah, so why give it up?
40 years old. Had hardly seen my children growing
right.
up.
Right.
We'd moved to Packersham, just outside Oxshott, on the Leatherhead Golf Course. Beautiful house, and we were very happy. And I thought, no, we've had enough of that, you know. And my Mardy's brother's fiancé wanted to open a shop, home ideas and gifts and things, and she and Marty got together, and we bought, which was a wonderful bit of luck, we bought the building in Cobham in Surrey, we were going to be sitting tenants there, and the council was selling properties at that time, so we were able to buy it for a song, set the shop up, and I came in and worked in there as well. We had a video library. Marty did Lottie Burke exercises in the back room. It was a big room with the mirrors we put up. It was great.
You really have tried your hand at all sorts, haven't
right.
you, really?
Yeah.
Because he also then went into the hotel industry.
I know.
A bit. And then tell us about the fashion retail line. That was less successful. What went on there?
Yeah. Well, we had the hotel in Scotland. We'd moved to Scotland because Marge's mum, after her husband had died, had married again and to a Scot, and they lived in the Borders, and we went up and bought this a huge house, which was wonderful. We used to have wonderful Christmases and New Years with all the family and friends coming up to stay with us, and we did that for a few years, but again, no real money in it, you know. Mm. A lot of hard work doing a hotel, and we managed to sell it very nicely as a private house, and we cleared our feet beautifully. And we went away to Cape Town for a holiday, came back, bought a new house, and had some money left over, and we went to a franchise exhibition in Glasgow. And there was one of these franchise companies was called Clothesline, and they bought end of lines and then would sell them on through their franchised outlets. Sounded great. So we took it on, paid the money, took it on, did the shop fit, staffed it. And the two of us and the two girls we employed, we ran it, and it seemed to be good.
Mm.
So good that we did another one and spent more money. That was all the money. I took another franchise on another shop in Dumfries, and then commuted between Galashiels and Dumfries, about sort of 60 miles a day, to run the two shops.
Wow.
And we thought, this just, something's going wrong. And it suddenly dawned on all the franchises, and there were about 30 of them, that something was wrong. You couldn't control the stock coming into the shop. You couldn't, if you wanted to go on sale, they wouldn't reduce the price to you. So in the end, there was this rolling bill getting bigger and bigger, and you suddenly realised that the only way you were going to get out was when he offered you, well, I'll take the business back. And
it was a complete scam.
Step away from it. Yeah.
So I rang everything.
Yeah. So I rang That's Life, and they took it on, which was great.
Did you get any money back?
Not a penny. Not a penny. We lost the lot.
And
everything.
Had to start from scratch.
Yeah, scratch again.
Well, we'll hear what happened next after we take a look at the weather and
Madness.
Travel. My guest in the studio is Robin Mayhew. We've been hearing his life story. We could do with another hour, really, to fit in everything you've managed to cram
That's
into
rich.
Your life so far. Now, though, the new business is toilets. Understand.
That's well, yes, okay. Well, we escaped Scotland, managed to sell up there and redeem ourselves somewhat, and managed to buy down here, which is a tricky move to make, but we did it. And my son Ben, oldest son, has a business which wonderfully he's called Ground Control. He does marquees and events. He's based in Billingshurst, and he said, "Look, Dad, we're always getting asked for toilets for these big functions." So I said, "Well, okay. I'll buy one." So we bought this huge thing, and
we're talking posh portaloos.
Oh, it's a luxury.
A
oh,
luxury,
yes.
Darling.
The luxury loo that comes to you.
Oh, lovely!
I actually got the web address of wc.co.uk, which is great. And so he tacks it onto his business, which gives us a little line of income through the summer. I wish it would be more through the winter, but it goes pretty flat.
Yeah.
But that keeps us going.
Yeah. And you're back doing your music as well.
And yes, now back down here. I did a few little things in between, like doing a parcel courier service and that sort of thing. But eventually came back to music, which has always been in the background there. Mm. And
and your big project at the moment, obviously, Refuse to Lose. Tell us more about
Refuse
that.
To Lose is a project which is aimed at all the school children I can get. I mean, the launch of it is next week. It's very important to me, and I feel strongly, because my life's been like this, with reflection, if back in the 60s I had actually sat down and written a couple of decent songs, I'd have probably had a wonderful life, done all the things I've done, but always had an income coming in comfortably. Probably had a couple of houses, maybe one in New York and one here in West Sussex, you know. if I'd done it then. So Refuse to Lose really tries to get young children and older children to think about exactly what they should do and form an idea and focus on it and go for it. And with the Olympics this year, using an athlete as the example, I think I told you once at Wakehurst that an athlete is a perfect example. If he or she wants to win the accolade, the wonderful thing, the gold medal for himself, herself, the celebrity it gives them, and for their country, from then on, they've got a career if they win it. They can be a commentator, they can be a coach, but to do that, they've got to dedicate themselves to that one thing, that one discipline, that one activity. They've got to train, they've got to compete with other athletes in that field, do all the things. They've even got to sell themselves to get sponsorship and that type of thing. So using that as a sort of a guideline, if you're going to be a doctor or a pilot or a draftsman or an architect, whatever it is, you have to look at it in detail, plot a course for you, look at all the things, maybe venture here and there to have a taste of things.
But set your mind on that
end goal. Exactly it, Alison.
If people want to find out more about the project, I know there's a website.
There is.
www.refuse-to-lose.co.uk. I'm afraid we're out of time,
okay.
But all of our guests get to choose one song which means something to them. What song have you gone for?
Well, I would love it to be Refuse to Lose, but apparently they only can get the one on, and they got this one first. This song I wrote for Charlotte Howe, one of the first songs I wrote when I got back into songwriting, when I sort of retired, as it were. It's called Together, and it's inspired by the birth of my first granddaughter, who's now 11, Isabel. Somebody said to me it should be played in every maternity ward, and I think Charlotte sings it very well, and I love it.
Together by Charlotte Howard and written by today's My Life guest, Robin Mayhew. It's just gone 20 to 4.